And we need somebody that's going to put country before party, someone that they can trust to have their backs when they need it most. Instead, what we have is Elise Stefanik, a career politician who's gone full Washington, who spends her time tearing us apart rather than solving problems.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, my conversation with former CIA officer and counterterrorism official Matt Castelli. He's the latest candidate to launch a bid to unseat New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of the 21st District. Castelli, who worked in both the Obama and Trump administrations, announced his bid for the Democratic nomination in a video. The Saratoga County resident took aim at the actions of Stefanik, the number three House Republican now in her fourth term, following the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol. A spokesperson for Stefanik called Castelli a far-left Dem and criticized him for kicking off his campaign in the run-up to the 9/11 anniversary. Three other Democrats are also running for the seat, along with Republican Lonnie Coons. I spoke with Castelli on Wednesday. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate that.
Sure. Okay. Many people listening to this probably haven't heard of you before. So who are you and why do you want to run for Congress?
That's a great question. Thanks for the opportunity to fill your audience in on that. I'm Matt Castelli, and I'm running for Congress because Northern New Yorkers are struggling, especially because of the pandemic. And we need somebody that's going to put country before party, someone that they can trust to have their backs when they need it most. Instead, what we have is Elise Stefanik, a career politician who's gone full Washington, who spends her time tearing us apart rather than solving problems, and who consistently puts herself and her interests before the needs of this district. Now, what do we have to show for that? We've got a declining population. We've got more job loss. We've got families that are working too hard for too little. Our veterans in our rural communities are still struggling to access care. And I'm struck by the fact that we're approaching the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the unity and common sense of purpose that we found after those attacks is what inspired me to serve our country. I joined the CIA, and for nearly 15 years, I combated terrorism. I led teams hunting down some of the world's most dangerous terrorists in the same department that found Osama bin Laden. I served in places like Afghanistan and Iraq on the front lines of intelligence collection and drove counterterrorism operations. And I served in both President Obama and Trump's White Houses because I believe that our national security transcends partisan politics. I am not a politician. I've spent my career serving missions that make this country stronger and safer. But that's exactly what we need. We need someone that will put country before party to get the job done. And I believe that the folks in the North Country can count on me to put this country and their community ahead of partisan politics, certainly ahead of my own interests, to solve problems for them and ensure that they have a representative that they can trust when they need it most. And that's why we need someone in Congress that's going to put this district and this country before their party.
Let me set a bit of a baseline for our listeners. How old are you? Where do you live? How long have you lived there?
I am 40 years old. I live in Saratoga County. And as I just alluded to, I spent nearly 15 years at the CIA. I went to Siena College in the Capital Region, not far from the district. And while I was here, I'm up in Saratoga County, up in Lake George, really enjoying the Adirondacks. But then, went to go serve my country after 9/11. I left the CIA about a year ago, and it was largely due to the COVID pandemic. Those events, we started to have a 9/11 every day. And so I left CIA and I left that career behind, and I joined a wonderful veteran-founded company that is a technology company reducing barriers to care for our veterans, for rural communities, for minorities, and it's based here in New York. Obviously, the COVID pandemic delayed a return back up to this region, but I long to return here for my family and friends, and that's why I live here now.
What qualifies you to be in Congress, having not held office before?
Well, I think what qualifies me is a long history of having already served my country. And I think that that's what's required. We need somebody that knows some of the top issues that are facing our national security, the security of our communities, and someone who has consistently put country before party. Listen, the folks we have in Washington right now, like Elise Stefanik, I can't tell you how many people I talk to that think that she's getting it wrong. she's consistently putting her own interests ahead of those of the district. And we wonder why Washington doesn't work. We need folks who have a record of service, who are willing to put their country before their party in order to get the job done for them.
The Stefanik campaign criticized you for announcing your campaign in the run-up to the anniversary of September 11th. What's your response to that?
Well, September 11th, as I just noted, was a moment of great national unity in the aftermath of that, and one in which inspired a generation of folks to serve their country, to put country before party and advance our national interests. And that's what it was for me. Now, Congresswoman Stefanik violated her oath to the Constitution and violated the role and responsibility of a representative that we entrust to put our interests ahead of her own, particularly in the aftermath of January 6th. And I'm struck by the fact, as we approach the anniversary of 9/11, that the domestic terrorists that attacked our Capitol achieved something that even the 9/11 hijackers were not able to achieve, an attack against the Capitol, an attack directly against our democracy. And anyone like Congresswoman Stefanik, who downplays the events of January 6th, well, they do a disservice to those brave patriots who took that plane down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, as well as the countless thousands who have served our country since 9/11 and given the ultimate sacrifice in order to preserve our democracy.
You say that the North Country is not getting what it needs from Congresswoman Stefanik and is looking for a change. However, she's been elected and reelected. She's now in her fourth term. I think it's fair to say she had embraced her role as a very close Trump surrogate in time for the last general election, and she overwhelmingly won reelection. Granting the fact that there will be a round of redistricting and the district might look a little different, don't the results from the voters counter what you're saying about her popularity?
Well, I think we look at the results of what those voters in this district are facing. And again, it's about a declining population. It's about more job loss. It's about families who are working too hard for too little. It's about veterans in our rural communities still struggling to access to care. So while Congresswoman Stefanik might be popular with tweets, she's not delivering in terms of the results for this district. And in fact, she's voting against the interest of this district. This district needs further investment in its infrastructure and opportunity for all, upward mobility for all, so that we can create better opportunities for folks within the 21st.
You made mention of the fact, and so did I in the introduction, that you worked in each of the last two administrations. For whom did you vote in the 2020 presidential election?
I voted for Joe Biden.
And how come?
I voted for Joe Biden because I believed he was the best option of the two. And I am a Democrat. I'm a proud Democrat. I'm running as a Democrat.
Okay, let me ask you about some issues. You keep mentioning access to care in rural stretches of New York 21. What type of health care system would you like to see? Are you a supporter of single-payer health care or not?
I'm a supporter of having options for folks. And so whether that's a public option, but I believe people should have the opportunity to choose their own insurance. But I think sometimes when we focus on simply insurance, that misses the point of the issues that are affecting folks in rural communities. It's not about, in some instances, whether they have access to insurance. It's about whether they have physical access to care and investment in infrastructure in our communities, the ability to reduce the barriers to care. If you have to drive an hour and a half to go fix a broken arm, or if you have to take a helicopter in order to deliver a baby, those are serious restrictions in the ability to actually access quality care. And we should be empowering our communities with more resources by which to actually provide for the health and well-being for folks.
Well, specifically, how would you do that?
Well, I think that there's a lot of opportunity to be made in terms of investing in community-based organizations. I've worked for the past year in a company that has been, and it's a private company, the ability to leverage private-public partnerships to create innovative solutions to coordinate care where health happens. Health happens in our communities. It happens in our homes. And so the ability to deliver on broadband, you can't go anywhere within this district without talking to folks about the need for broadband. And so telehealth and being able to deliver healthcare in someone's home through adequate broadband is an incredibly important issue. But also providing for resources within our community. This is something that I've been doing over the past year in empowering community-based organizations, nonprofits, who provide human and social services to folks, that's critical in actually improving the overall health and well-being for folks. And having opportunities for investment and critical resources for those community-based organizations where people live, work, and pray, that is what's needed.
Was it a mistake for the U.S. to withdraw completely from Afghanistan?
Listen, my colleagues and I served on the front lines of our counterterrorism efforts in Afghanistan. And I'm proud of the work that we did to degrade al-Qaeda and prevent another 9/11. I'm hearing from friends, especially those of us who served in Afghanistan, that are having a hard time. I'm having a hard time. I understand their frustration. And we owe it to the folks that gave the ultimate sacrifice, answers about what we have to show for 20 years of effort and trillions of dollars and thousands of lives lost in terms of the ability to preserve and protect America's long-term vital interests in Afghanistan. Now, there's plenty of blame to go around about the manner in which we withdrew from Afghanistan. Does Biden administration share some blame? But most certainly, too, does the Trump administration for the terrible deal that they made with the Taliban. There have been 20 years of missteps across both parties. But while we talk about presidential administrations, we seem to be missing Congress and their role in this. Congress has a very important role in the conduct of oversight, in the authorization of war, in the funding and regulation of our military. And folks like Elise Stefanik, who sit on the House Armed Services Committee, they've been absent in this process. So it's one thing for Congresswoman Stefanik to lobby out empty tweets and hollow press releases concerned after a crisis, but she had a role and responsibility to prevent a crisis from happening to begin with. And she had ample opportunity dating all the way back to when the Trump administration first announced in February 2020 about their plans to withdraw from Afghanistan to represent her constituent soldiers, those folks out at Fort Drum, the 10th Mountain Division, who have been the most deployed division since 9/11, to represent their interests and those of their families to ensure the manner in which we extricated ourselves from Afghanistan continued to preserve the service and sacrifice that was made by those soldiers out there. And she was absent on the job. And so I view that as a dereliction of duty, and our folks in the military understand that that's a fireable offense.
But is the policy that the U.S. has settled on after 20 years to leave, do you agree with that policy?
I agree with I would have liked to have seen our ability to preserve counterterrorism capabilities in country in some way, shape, or form. Now, that's a different question than uniformed military officers and having an active conflict. And so there were a variety of constructs that could have been explored. Now, the Taliban get a vote in this, and the Afghan government and Afghan National Security Forces, who did not stand up and instead, in the absence of having the support from the United States, we saw the rise of the Taliban take over. And so there is a distinction here with respect to how we could preserve U.S. presence going forward in order to preserve our intelligence collection on the ground, which is critically important, and some sort of counterterrorism capability. And so it's a different question in terms of ending the war and what construct serves in a later iteration. And we'll see what happens with respect to that.
Okay, let me go to some domestic issues while I can. The issue of guns has been a big one in this district in particular in previous election cycles involving Congresswoman Stefanik and other Democratic opponents. What is your policy in terms of gun reform or scaling back any sort of gun ownership rights as we talk here in 2021?
I support the Second Amendment. I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and that includes the Second Amendment. As a former CIA officer, I carried firearms in the line of duty in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. I have extensive training on the Glock 17 and M4 rifle, which I carried in those war zones. And I will protect the rights of our hunters, our sportsmen and women, lawful gun owners who want to keep their families and their communities safe. But on that latter point, there is more work to be done to keep our community safe from gun violence and in keeping firearms out of the hands of criminals and dangerously mentally ill. And let's be clear, I was a counterterrorism official. I want to keep guns out of the hands of terrorists. So if you're on a no-fly list, you shouldn't have access to a firearm. These are common sense things, and we need common sense background checks, as most Americans and lawful gun owners agree on. But here's yet another issue in which Congresswoman Elise Stefanik puts her interests and special interests and her party's interests ahead of our country and ahead of our communities.
So would you support new limits on the types of weapons that the everyday American can buy separate from the issue of a background check?
What Washington has failed to do is listen to the voice of the people, and that's on a whole host of issues, and failed to put their country first instead of their party to get something done. I will take a close look at any proposal that comes before Congress, especially those dealing with guns, and make sure that it is right for the people of this district, because I will always put their interests first.
Recently, the state of Texas passed a gun law that just went into effect that allows open carrying of guns in public without a permit. Is that the kind of thing that you would oppose in Congress?
I will take a close look at any proposal that comes forward before Congress as it pertains on a federal level. But again, especially anything dealing with guns, I want to make sure that it's right for the people of this district, and that is going to require conferring with the people of this district to make sure that I'm putting their interests first.
Okay, what about the issue of abortion, speaking of Texas? Do you support a woman's right to choose what to do, you know, with her health?
Yes, women should make their own personal health decisions, not the government. Full stop.
In this Democratic field, I listed many other Democrats who are running with hopes of taking on Congresswoman Stefanik next year. What distinguishes you from people like Bridie Farrell and Matt Pettorde and Ezra Watson?
Listen, I applaud anyone who's stepping up to serve their community and their country. As someone that's done that their entire life, I can say that it's incredibly rewarding. And I believe that's the big difference in this race, because Elise Stefanik has consistently put her party and her own interests ahead of this community and our country. She's a career politician. She's gone full Washington. She spends all of this time tearing us apart rather than solving our problems. And she consistently puts her own interests ahead of this district and our country. So the reality is that we need someone who's going to put country before party. And that's not just our campaign slogan. That is something that I've lived throughout the entirety of my career. I have served missions to make this country stronger and safer. I have served presidents of both parties, even at the White House, because our national security should transcend partisan politics. And I'm going to bring that same level of dedication of keeping this country safe to solving problems and uniting our communities in the 21st, not dividing them.
Will you set any limits on yourself in terms of fundraising, in terms of who you take money from or dollar amounts?
Well, we just launched today, and I'm overwhelmed by the excitement behind this campaign. You know, folks are really ready for a change. But it's not lost on me that someone like Elise Stefanik has all of the special interests in her pocket, and they're going to funnel millions of dollars into her campaign. I will not be taking corporate PAC money. I'm going to instead match it by aggressively working up and down the North Country, asking for $5, $10, $25 donations, and making the case to each of them that we need someone in Washington who's going to put country ahead of party, and that is me.
Okay, last thing for now. President Biden proposes to pay for his sweeping infrastructure, human infrastructure bill, which is in tandem with the infrastructure package for roads and bridges that's being discussed in Congress right now, by raising taxes on high earners. Do you agree with that approach? And what would a tax policy look like if you were in Congress? How would you vote?
I will always seek to keep taxes for our middle and income Americans low. We do need to have a conversation about fairness when it comes to taxes. And so I will evaluate every proposal that comes in front of Congress through that lens of whether it is fair and whether it represents the interests of the district and the community that I was elected to represent.
Should Congress move to forgive all student loans, as has been discussed recently?
Well, again, this is something that I will take in the context of the district and whether it represents the interests of this district to do so. But someone who has student loans, I will say that this is an issue that is both personal to me, but my personal interests will never override those of the district. And so it's something I'll take a hard look at and make the best decision for the district.
That's congressional candidate Matt Castelli, a Democrat who has just kicked off a bid in New York's 21st congressional district, the seat currently held by Republican Elise Stefanik, who's in her fourth term. Matt, thanks for taking all of this time, and let's keep the conversation going.
Thank you, Ian. Looking forward to it.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.